Happy Friday afternoon, Steve Hallstrom listeners. This is Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve on this beautiful, I don't know if the day, any day, gets any better than what we're experiencing here on October 10th. It is absolutely beautiful outside, and light breeze, 70 degrees, and I don't think it gets any better for especially this late here in the year in October, and we will take it as we can get it. But thank you for tuning in this afternoon. Again, this is Andrew Sletten, and was with you yesterday and here today. Thank you again to Steve for letting me sit in behind the microphone and sharing my heart with the city of Fargo, and have a few things lined up for you today. Looking forward to our conversation. And as always, would love for you to join in on the conversation. Give us a call at 701-271-1100, or you can text in some comments at 701-237-1590. We are 30 days removed from the Charlie Kirk assassination, and would love to hear your thoughts on, over the last month, what has changed in your life, in your world. And some are saying that this is to Generation Z, and the latest generation, they're calling Generation Alpha, but Generation Z, many would call that this assassination of Charlie Kirk was their 9/11 moment. It was something that gripped the heart of this country in a way that really hasn't been felt in a long, long time. And many are saying all the way back to 9/11 for like the millennial generation. And, you know, over the last 30 days, it seems like it's been a year, not a month, with what has happened these last 30 days, just with coverage and his memorial service and just, of course, the news cycle going crazy. And, you know, I haven't really had a chance to share my thoughts on air of the assassination. And I think I will a little later in the show, because I do believe that this was a spiritual assassination, not just a political assassination, but I do believe that this was a good and evil thing. And there's been lots of discussion, but I'm going to share my thoughts a little later in the show about this. Again, 1 month removed. It is October 10th. 1 month ago, we lost Charlie Kirk in a terrible tragedy. And our nation has really been reeling ever since. And the amount of good that has come out of something so evil is really staggering, which is just testament again to the fact and the biblical truth that what the enemy means for evil, God always turns for good. So we'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Where are we 1 month out from the Charlie Kirk assassination? Want to spend quite a bit of time here in the 4 o'clock hour talking about the city of Fargo and the policies that have been enacted around our homeless situation downtown. I feel like there is a path that we have started to take in the last 4 or 5 years in our approach to homelessness that is leading to not a great destination. And we're not the first ones to experience a sharp increase in a homeless situation. And, of course, the left coast, the west coast cities have been always the antidotes for, or I should say, the examples of, like, What we are experiencing now has been done before and happened in many other cities. So what do we do? And what have we done? And I think asking those questions is not it's not coming against anyone or anything. I think it's questions that we as city and county and state need to ask. And the way I'll frame it just to start is, it's the whole freedom versus responsibility argument. And I always subscribe to this truth, is that freedom is not the ability to do whatever we want to do, but freedom is the ability to do what we ought to do. And so it's holding all of us first and individually responsible for our decisions, but then holding a community to some level and to some standard of responsibility. Because I feel, and this is what we're going to get into a little bit on the program today, that sometimes our approach to homelessness is not, it centers around freedom, which we all love freedom, and it's very difficult sometimes to interject ourselves into the lives of others because, again, we want to respect the freedom of every individual. But at the same time, there's also a responsibility that comes along with that freedom. And if that responsibility is not being asked for, and that responsibility is not being communicated and people held to it, then what do we do? Well, I think we find that what has happened in the West Coast cities we can use as an example. And so that's what I'm going to talk quite a bit about today here in the 4 o'clock hour. I'm reading a book currently by author Michael Schellenberger, and he is no stranger to the flag, but he's actually tonight over in Minneapolis. He's headlining an event for the American Experiment, speaking to this topic and others. But he has written a book entitled San Francisco, and I encourage you to get a copy of the book San Francisco, and the subtitle is Why Progressives Ruin Cities. And, Michael Schellenberger is a gentleman that self-admittedly was one that was pretty progressive in his policies surrounding, homelessness and drug legalization, taking kind of the progressive approach, but quickly realizing, being and living in the Berkeley, San Francisco area, that, what these policies were creating were things that were not solving the problems. And this is really what I want to dig into. And please share your thoughts and let me know what you think. 701-271-1100. We'd love to have a conversation with you, trying to flesh some of this out. I have a business downtown. Our church is located in a leased spot downtown. And I am literally downtown every day. And I love our downtown. I eat down there. We go to dinner. Favorite ice cream spot is downtown. I work down there. I have investments down there. And I've seen such a, and this is all anecdotal, of course, but there's a response from one, our police department and elected officials, that I really want to bring out today. And this is not intended to be a criticism, but just simply an observation that we have a much bigger problem than many say we do. And crime statistics being, and this just was an article that came out recently about crime statistics, those can be delivered in any way you want to receive them. But the reality is, when you have conversations with individuals who are scared and not willing to go downtown or take their families downtown, I visit with so many people that is the case. Businesses are closing up. Investment is leaving. And so the reality is, incentives have worked to draw business and dollars to our downtown, but it also works in bringing individuals to our town that want to take advantage of the services that are being provided downtown. Incentives work. And I don't think there's any disagreement from an economic standpoint that they work to bring investment to an area. But I want to talk about incentives also for the homeless population and those that, whatever situation and reason why they found themselves in a homeless situation, know this, is that they are going there for services. And we're going to get into it. So we got to get to a quick break, but I encourage you to join in on the conversation. Shoot us your text, your comments, 701-237-1590, or give us a call. We'd love to chat with you over the phone, 701-271-1100. This is Andrew Slutton sitting for Steve. Stay with us. It is coming up here on 420 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Andrew Slutton sitting in on this beautiful Friday afternoon, October the 10th. Thank you for taking some time to tune in, whether you're driving home or heading out even to the lake. I guess tomorrow and Sunday is not supposed to be as great of weather as we're experiencing today, but man, what a day to tee it up or even drop a line in the water. Whatever you're planning to do, it is a beautiful day. Hope that you're able to enjoy it. And talking about homeless situation in Fargo and what we as a city and a community should be doing as far as policy and responsibilities, I want to hear your thoughts. And we have taken the approach of, providing services. And I would say this, is that the Downtown Engagement Center that we have here in Fargo, it began, and really, I think, initially, and this is self-admitted on behalf of the officials, I think, down in that area, is it was started as a result of the COVID crisis, and we received federal funds as a city to open up the engagement center. And then as those federal funds have kind of dried up, we as the city have been responsible for more of that. And so there's been some discussion on the city commission about what should be done with the downtown engagement center. And so this is kind of the way that government works, is something begins, whether it was federal dollars or dollars coming from somewhere, those dollars dry up and budgets change. And here we are kind of left holding the bag. But what has happened is because of some of the services that are being provided, and I think just a natural increase with homelessness, with mental health crisis and drug addictions, and the incredible increase in drug use around our nation, we're in the situation that we're in. And city of Fargo, our size, we have to, in my opinion, we're going to have to decide what path we want to take. And so there's a couple of ways we can address this. And I'm going to say some things I think that the city has done right, and then I'm maybe going to address some things that we can do. And some of the things I'm going to say today, I do take from, again, Michael Schellenberger, who has written the book San Francisco, and he has done a lot of research and observation interviews, and brings out many great points in this book, which I, again, would encourage you to get a copy and read for yourself. But I'm going to visit about a couple of things and points that he makes. You know, he makes this just simply the fact of homelessness is not necessarily, and really is not ever, I shouldn't say ever, but very, very few cases is a case of just pure poverty. And he makes this case explicitly in his book. It's a problem of untreated mental illness and drug addiction. And so drug addiction, I mean, whatever the root cause, whether somebody has experienced trauma in their life, if they have a mental illness and drug addiction, a lot of times do go hand in hand. Sometimes, too, we have to say that drug addiction is a result of just partying too much and getting into a lifestyle that eventually takes over your entire life. Whatever the reason of drug addiction, we know that that's a huge, huge player when it comes to the homeless crisis. And so let's just bring that home for a minute. In the city of Fargo, I have some friends that live downtown. And just the other day, a friend told me he was walking by the RDO building downtown. Somebody was shooting up in the alley behind the RDO building. Visited with another individual that they saw people smoking meth. And this is public. This is open. Down in the downtown where drugs are being in very visible form being taken, and you hate to see it, but the reality is, are they being prosecuted for doing drugs in the open? And this homeless discussion really lends itself and leads itself into a drug decriminalization conversation. So drug addiction being a huge, huge issue, and this is not just in Fargo, but around the country. So Michael Schellenberger in his book talks about drug addiction being probably the biggest issue around. So in San Francisco, they would have literally open tent cities and areas like tent cities that the homeless would be in. Well, really what it was an environment that was permissible for drug use. And so he calls this the magnet effect. It was literally people that were being drawn from all over the country that had a drug problem. They could come to San Francisco, and in these tent cities and certain areas of town, they could openly do drugs and they would not be prosecuted. But it wasn't just the not being prosecuted. They also were given, in some situations, they were given drugs to keep them basically from going into severe withdrawals. Like, it was, I'm telling you, there's so much nuance around this conversation, I know, but when we talk about untreated drug addiction and untreated mental illness, those are the two driving and majority factors, and majority by a long shot when it comes to homelessness. And so let's just be honest and talk about drug addiction and mental illness. Okay, so the question that that he asked, and I would ask as well, is, so why in certain cities do we see people on the streets and homelessness in such a severe way, and in other cities we don't? And so with all things being equal, so let's just look at, let's say, San Francisco or California cities. They have good weather, the weather, of course, being a factor for people just being able to sleep outside. Of course, Fargo is a little bit different climate than that. But let's just compare, let's say, a California city to a city in Miami, city of Miami, city in Florida, southern Florida city. Well, there's a vast difference. In fact, my wife and I, we were chaperoning a missions trip, and we had a layover in Miami. We've used Miami as a hub for a couple of trips we've been on, and so we had some overnight stays, and so we were downtown Miami, and this was pre-COVID, so 2018, 2017, and we remember walking downtown Miami and just commenting to ourselves, this is a super clean city. We never felt unsafe. There was a beautiful mall that we went to in the downtown area. We went and we had some lunch and walked around the downtown area and commented on how clean it was. And we didn't see really any of what we see in downtown Fargo. And of course, this was pre-COVID and things could change. But he addresses some of this in his book, Michael Schellenberger does. And he says, you know, the policies of Miami are vastly different than those in San Francisco. For instance, Miami has outlawed tent cities and camping on public property, which, to Fargo's credit, we have taken that step, which I think was a step in the right direction, because we saw what, and Michael Schellenberger is very adamant about this. He says in tent cities and in homeless encampments, that he says 100% of those in the homeless encampments have either mental health or drug addiction issues. He says it's really the data proves it out. And so, to the city of Fargo's credit, we have shut down those tent cities and the ability to camp on public property. Okay, so we're asking these questions. What is homelessness? Well, it's untreated drug addiction, untreated mental illness. Well, what are the solutions? And I think that's what we're going to get into in the next segment, is what can be done about it. You know, one of the other aspects of homelessness is this thought that there's not access to affordable housing. And in certain parts of the country, this is a bigger issue than in others, in simply, you know, rent rates being high and real estate pricing being very high in certain parts of the country compared to others. But, you know, there's a couple of different initiatives when it comes to housing. One of the big initiatives that is, and I've heard this in Fargo for many years now, is this initiative that some cities have implemented called Housing First. It's a Housing First initiative. And what simply Housing First is, and somebody can call in and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but from my understanding, it's saying this, is that without a roof over your head and without shelter, there's no way that somebody is going to get their life back on track. So it's leading first with housing and then addressing the untreated drug addiction or untreated mental illness. It's starting with housing first. So this is a policy that many progressives will be pushing and as an answer. And listen, I don't throw stones at anyone trying to provide solutions, but I think we need to be honest enough to ask the question, is what we're doing working? And is what we're doing going to provide a sustainable environment for one, a business owner and somebody to put in an investment in property downtown? There's a lot of nuance to this, but I think that what we have done and what we're still in conversation with the city of Fargo is we're building it bigger and better as far as services to the homeless population. And I just have this gut feeling that it's not going to produce an outcome that we're going to be happy with. And we don't have to wonder. It's been done before. Let's just look around at other cities and see what policies implemented have created. And I think if we're intellectually honest, we'll be able to say, you know what, we don't want to see what San Francisco is seeing in the city of Fargo. And so we'd love, please, your opinion on this. 701-271-1100. We have to get to news and weather here at the bottom of the hour. Stick with us. Coming up in our 5 o'clock hour, Nate Douglas, the executive director of the Perry Center, will be with us. I'm so looking forward to that conversation with Nate about what the Perry Center is doing. They have a fundraiser coming up on Monday of next week. We're going to visit a little bit about that, but also just what the Perry Center does. It's a wonderful program here in Fargo-Moorhead. But stick with us and give us a call, 701-271-1100. Welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show this Friday afternoon, beautiful Friday afternoon. This is Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve, and we've been discussing the homeless situation here in Fargo. It's something that I've become obviously very aware of, being downtown, and feel like the conversations that are being had with our city commission and those in kind of the seats of authority, I just feel like the way and the direction that we're heading is we've seen it before, and just a little nervous of the outcome. And so I want to talk about it. I want to hear your points of view. Give us a call, 701-271-1100, and let us know what you think. We'd be glad to try to work through some of this with you. One of the things that Michael Schellenberger makes in his book, San Francisco is the name of the book. He, again, talks about housing, and he makes a case that housing is not a major driver of homelessness as much as we think it is. Now, it is a part of it, but this reality is that housing prices are a factor, but it really depends on the social climate of the city. It depends on the policies of the city. So there's a couple of studies that he cites, and I want to discuss this. One of them is a Harvard study that was done over the course of 12 years, and that Harvard study stated that with a housing first policy, there was no better outcomes than those that didn't have a housing first policy, meaning there was literally no difference. And the cost associated with a housing first policy is astronomical. It's really unsustainable. So how can we as a city, or whether you want to have even a public-private partnership, how can we fork over money for a full-blown apartment for an individual without them having any skin in the game at all for being clean, for making steps to better their life? The housing first policy is literally just only initiative of getting somebody into a place, an apartment, having a roof over their head, having their own place, and then working on the issues. Well, it's a policy that, according to a Harvard study over the course of 12 years, had no better outcomes. There's another study by the National Academies of Science that also talked and did a study and said that there was actually worse outcomes with a housing first policy because there wasn't a treatment or dealing with mental health and addiction at all. And so I think there's so much misinformation out there because we see it. We see the fruit of these policies, and the fruit is that there's more homelessness and crime rates and open drug use. And so I think we need to have a very, very serious conversation about it. And that's what Jim has done. He has called in. Thank you so much, Jim, for calling into the Steve Hallstrom Show. Wants to share a point of view. I appreciate you calling in. What's on your mind?
Oh, I was just wondering, do you know anything what their plans are for Madison School?
I do not. No, I do not have any idea. What have you heard?
I don't know if it's going to be some kind of low-income housing. They're going to put some housing in there. Is it going to be a food dispensary place? Or it's kind of weird that, I've just seen a kind of a decline of, school, they have a hockey rink there, and it's what a waste of money.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, they're just throwing money at this place, and I'm just surprised. I live in the area, and I'm just going, what's it going to turn out to be? Is NDSU going to buy it up? I mean, they own so much property the way it is.
Mm. It's a good question, Jim. I don't know. I mean, we could try to maybe get the answers for you, but I think you bring up a good point in that saying throwing more money at something, trying to solve some of these issues has not worked. And so we can sure visit about that. But thank you, Jim, for calling in. Appreciate your...
One other thing I want to say, where they have the dump ground right now, the city dump,
mm-hmm.
where I live out here too. I see a lot of vultures. I mean, and I think they ought to call this city Fargo, because right now I'm looking outside and I'm seeing nothing but gulls flying overhead.
Fargo.
It's thick.
G-U-L-L. I love
thick
it.
Thick as seas. All right.
All right. Well, great observation, Jim. Thanks for sharing. Have a great weekend. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye.
It's interesting to me the where they're planning to put the new engagement center. So I'll just spend a little bit of time on what I understand about their plans. And this is when I say there, the city of Fargo is has had some public meetings. They had just 2 weeks ago a meeting that they asked the public to come in and share some thoughts about where they're planning to put the new engagement center. So what they're saying is there are the existing downtown engagement center, which is right on 4th Street, right across the street from the Fargo Civic Center on 4th Street downtown there. They are basically saying that the facility is not serving their needs anymore. It's a three-story building. I think it has a basement and then two stories. And what they're saying is it's spread out over the course of three floors. They would like something all on one floor. And what they do in the engagement center is there are a lot of nonprofits that use the engagement center as kind of a hub to meet and provide services, which, again, it's a public-private partnership. But, what we have seen is an increase in the use of the engagement center to the point where now they need to get into something that is not just better suited but also much bigger and larger. So they have proposed a few different locations, and one of those locations is the former Fargo Brewing location, which is right on the corner of University and 7th Avenue. And there's a lot of concerns I have with that location, one being on a very high traffic street, and people are going 40 miles an hour all the time on University right there, and with increased pedestrian traffic, and it poses quite a bit of risk. The other location is there's an empty building that's over by the police station on 25th Street, which is on 1st Avenue, kind of over by the Brewhalla area. And that's another proposed location. There's also another one up kind of on the 7th Avenue area. And basically it's this. We're talking a lot of square footage. And I know the Fargo Brewing location is for sale, and I think the price tag is over $2 million. And so we're not talking a small sum of money that would – be made as an investment into this. And it's a step that do we as a city want to take? And there's a lot of ask for money for not only from not only the state legislature but federal money to try to combat some of this. But guys, I just again have this feeling that if you build it, they will come. And studies have proven that policies that are just enabling more of this behavior is going to increase the behavior even more. And this is where I think ideology comes into play. And Michael Schellenberger addresses this in his book, and I thought he was spot on with his take about what he calls victimology. And so there's this kind of progressive idea that those that have experienced homelessness are maybe a different class of people. And that's not true. We're all human beings made in the image of God, and we all, have had experiences in life that shape who we are. And unfortunately, because of broken humanity, there has been a lot of trauma in people's lives. There have been things, broken homes and broken relationships, and just abuse in all forms and fashions, that all of it's evil, and evil drives people into addiction. Evil drives people into mental illness, and sin is the problem. So I'm just going to say that is sin is the problem. But this idea of victimology is a very real thing. And he uses an example that I just want to ask all of our listeners. The example is this, is do we... If somebody would, how can I say this politely? I'm just gonna say it. And we've experienced this at our building downtown. I've had to pick up feces, human feces, around our building from those staying in the area. And so he uses this example. He asks a question: if there was a frat boy that walked by and they defecated on your property, or if there was a homeless person that defecated on your property. He asked this to some leaders. He says, should one be prosecuted and not the other? And they said, absolutely. The frat boy should be prosecuted because he's not a victim of abuse or trauma. You go down the list, and he should be held responsible for that decision. But the one and the homeless individual should not be held responsible because he is a victim of his whatever trauma. And so I get it. Like, there's been a lot of things that have happened that's been terrible. But should we hold people to a different standard because of their experience in life? And this is a very delicate thing. I'm not saying that it's not. But I am asking some pretty honest questions today, because if we have this victim mindset when we approach an individual, we will never be able to hold that individual to any amount of responsibility, because it would further victimize who they are. And that's a progressive policy. So that's a hard question. But I think it's one that needs to be asked. And we should ask ourselves that first. And victim mentality starts with me. It starts with Andrew Sletton. Am I a victim of my situation? Or has what has happened to me been, it definitely has shaped me into who I am, but I cannot let it define me for the next step that I take. And so when we deal with public policy, I think we have to ask the honest questions of, is holding someone responsible for an action that they take further victimizing them, or is it just what polite society should do to continue to have a polite society? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Give us a call, 701-271-1100, or shoot us a text at 701-237-1590. We will finish up this conversation on the other side of the break. And then 5 o'clock, we'll visit with Nate Douglas, the executive director of the Perry Center. And also want to share my thoughts towards the end of the show. I think I'm going to share my thoughts on the one-year anniversary of Charlie Kirk assassination. So stick with us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. It is 4:51 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. This is Andrew Sletton sitting in for Steve, and appreciate you tuning in. And we're discussing the city of Fargo response, really, to the growing homeless crisis in our town. And I would say crisis is the appropriate word. Text came in, and texter says, I'm a college student here at NDSU, go downtown every day and see homeless people constantly. A lot of them are high as a kite, looking like zombies in the middle of the day, and they asked the question, does the college have any role in helping with this problem or providing any assistance since they own buildings down there? It's a good question. I'm not sure what NDSU is doing. I know the facility, actually our business is only about a block away from that NDSU building, and so we see the same thing. And, you know, I'll just touch on this briefly and encourage your thoughts as well. Give us a call, 701-271-1100. Appreciate Macy being behind the board today, taking all the phone calls. And but, you know, I'll say this about our situation downtown is if you look at housing, we have an apartment building that is about a block away from our office. And looking out my office window, I see it every day. And it's literally every week where we see the fire department and police showing up at the Cooper House is where it's at. It's an apartment building that is known in the area. I'm telling you, it's really devastating to see what goes on and the traffic going in and out of that place. You know, I'm no detective, but the amount of drugs that's being run through that apartment building is staggering, absolutely staggering. And so housing being provided in this situation, being having untreated addiction and mental illness going on, is to me revealing the fact that housing first is, yes, they have a roof over their head, and I celebrate that, but man, we got to take care of these issues because fire and police are over there literally every week. And, we have seen stuff I can't even describe to you what has happened over there. We have Thor calling in from Mapleton. Thor, thank you for calling in to the Steve Hallstrom Show. What's your thoughts?
Well, right off here, a couple of stipulations. One is that any problem is easier to solve with less information. So the more that you learn about it, the more complicated it gets. The other is that any situation is easier to analyze or whatever from a distance. So given that, I will say that any behavior that is experienced is that what is permitted. And a home example would be, well, a loving but very strict upbringing. Some behaviors are simply not permitted.
Right.
So they were not experienced. And harsh as it sounds, Jimmy Carter did this to the society by emptying the facilities in the 70s. And now we're wondering, what in the world should we do with Kirkbride down there in Fergus Falls? And not only were those people protected, as was society, but they were given something to do. Any of us is going to behave badly if we don't have something to do. And most of us need varying degrees of pressure to behave. And apparently, the segment of population we're addressing here is allowed to behave the way they behave. I don't have an answer, but that's my observation.
Yeah, no, Thor, I think you're spot on. I appreciate those comments and taking time to share them. That's the point I'm making today, is with a victim ideology that is being kind of perpetrated through the housing first in particular mindset. It's asking the question of how can we hold people responsible for their actions. And so I'm going to get into in the couple minutes we have left, I'm going to get into a couple of the solutions that I feel that Michael Schellenberger lays out based on his observation that I feel like we should really consider. One is, he talks about, instead of a housing first approach, he looks at a shelter first approach. And what a shelter first approach does is that it helps people obviously get automatically into having a roof over their head. And, you know, there's shelters to private rooms to apartments. It's this kind of incremental and reward-based housing model. So, for instance, like, there's a study that was done in Birmingham, Alabama, around this, where individuals would have to pass a drug test to keep a room instead of being in an open kind of shelter environment. They had private rooms, and there was some incentives for those that, based on their behavior, based on what they allowed themselves to do and not to do, and one of those was to pass a drug test, there was a noticeable difference in the incentive that if you want a private room to get your feet underneath you and have more privacy, we want to help you do that, but in order to do that, you have to pass a drug test. And this was a study done in Birmingham, Alabama, that was overwhelming in the success rate of those that, and of course there's always outliers to this, but they kept themselves clean because they operated in a space where they had a reason to stay clean. And so, Thor, I think you're spot on. Thank you so much for calling in and into the Steve Alstrom Show. Have a great weekend. Appreciate it. Coming up here in the 5 o'clock hour, we're going to have in studio with us Nate Douglas. He is the executive director of the Perry Center. They have a wonderful event coming up next Monday. We're going to visit about that and also visit about the great stuff that the Perry Center is doing here in the Fargo-Moorhead area. So stick with us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. This is Andrew Slutton sticking with you on this Friday, October 10th. Hope you're having a wonderful, it's a beautiful Friday afternoon. Welcome to the 5 o'clock hour of the Steve Hallstrom Show. This is Andrew Slutton sitting with you on your drive home today. Hope that you had a great work week and a great weekend lined up. Taking advantage of the weather here this afternoon. It is an absolutely beautiful day, like gorgeous day. And bugs are pretty much non-existent. Light wind, sun, I'm telling you, it's like, it's absolutely gorgeous. So hope you get a chance to enjoy the day. And thank you for hanging with us. Would love to continue the conversation on City of Fargo and the homeless situation. Have a couple of other articles to get to, and also want to visit about the 1 month basically anniversary of the Charlie Kirk assassination. Going to get to some of my thoughts at the end of the show on that. Drastically has changed our world, and so we're going to continue to talk about that. But before we do that, we have in studio with us Nate Douglas. He is the executive director of the Perry Center here in Fargo. And no stranger, the name Perry Center, I'm sure, is no stranger to many of our listeners, but it's an honor to have Nate in studio with us talking about the Perry Center. Nate, it's good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if somebody has not heard of the Perry Center, what's the elevator pitch? Here in Fargo, I know it's been around for quite a while, but just share a little bit with our listeners of what the Perry Center does.
Yeah, so the Perry Center, we're a maternity home. We're located in West Fargo. We serve women between the ages typically of 12 and 35 that are facing an unexpected pregnancy. We provide shelter for them, education, equip them, just prepare them for motherhood. So what we do, it's very long term. It's not a 30-day, 60-day program. We're a life transformation program, and that takes time, that takes investment. I'm the crazy guy in town that lets residents know day one that their stay is indefinite as long as they're moving towards their goals. And our population, they're coming from really difficult situations. You know, they're coming from homelessness, rape, abuse, trafficking, you know, moments of a parent dropping off a teenager and driving off. And we have that opportunity to share what they've experienced in life is not normal. We can show them a new, healthy way of living. So it's very, very hands-on, very intense sometimes, but very rewarding.
And I know you guys have just recently went through a building addition and increasing the number of space that you're able to help women with. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's exciting and terrifying in the same manner, you know. So, we're in a building project we announced last October. It's getting close to the end. Somewhere around November, we'll finish up. Same location, but really expanding from 9 bedrooms to 33 bedrooms. If anybody gets excited about bathrooms, it's 5 bathrooms to 18 bathrooms. 14,500 square feet for space for these moms to grow and be healthy and independent. And so we have a lot of different rooms. We have kids' rooms and more community space. We're actually launching a new business that we announced not too long ago that, teaching them to fish, not just giving them a fish. And so we're creating business opportunities, child care and housing all day one. And so really trying to make a big impact on their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from a community perspective, Nate and I had a meeting last week and I was just able to hear his heartbeat a little bit more about what the Perry Center does. And I had heard the name, but hadn't really dug in a little bit to what you guys do. But after hearing his vision, and you know, one of the things that I really appreciated about our conversation, Nate, was when you shared your heartbeat about the needs that were being presented and not having enough space to facilitate the women that were coming in, and you and your staff, not just, you know, 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, but taking individuals into your own home. This is the real deal ministry. And when, you know, obviously that in many ways not being ideal for in any form or fashion, but ministry is never convenient.
No.
And I felt that heartbeat from you. I just wanted to say this publicly, thanks. Like that's amazing because you're doing the work of the Lord. And so organizations like this exist and grow because of a heartbeat to serve and welcome people and help people to grow out of that situation, which is exactly what just the feel I get from you and the Perry Center. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, ministry. It's 7 days a week, 365 days. You know, God has never called us to step into comfortable. You know, I think he's often calling us to be uncomfortable. And for our ministry, sometimes that looks very different than a lot of people. But I don't want to turn people away for space. I believe that what we offer from our program is so important for these women that are coming from crisis situations. And so we want to serve whoever God brings to our ministry. And that sometimes means our families are being called to the uncomfortable and we're opening up our homes. And we've done that several times with moms and kids. And I always say that's some of the most impactful time for that mom, where they actually get to see the family operate as a whole. All the good, the bad, the ugly, but they say, wow, okay, this is what you guys are teaching me. This is what it actually looks like, and I want to mirror that.
It's amazing, man.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, I feel the goosebumps just you talking about it, because that's what we're called to do. And, And so I thank you for that. How does somebody get a referral to the Perry Center? Somebody, can they just call you? Like if somebody's listening right now and they know somebody that has an unplanned pregnancy, can they just call the center?
They can absolutely call us. So applying is really easy. Just going to our website, perrycenter.org. And, you know, we have referrals from other partnering organizations, social services, jails, prisons, all of those things. You know, 50% of our residents are coming from outside of even this area. So we have residents that are from Alaska and Texas and Illinois and Louisiana, all these places. And they're finding us online, social media, and saying, hey, this is my situation. Do you think you can help me? Mm. And so the process is really simple. But our big question is, do you want to do a life change? You know, that's the big question. If you want to just come to the Perry Center, kick up your legs and chill, it's not going to go well for you. We want you invested because we're this life transformation that takes time, that takes investment. And so I want to make sure that you want a change. And sometimes we've had ladies come to us and say, yeah, I don't want to do all that. I don't want all the rules and all the guidelines and all of those things. And then in 30 days, 45 days, all of a sudden we get a call and say, hey, I really need this. I'm ready to go. And we've seen those women just crush life, and it's pretty fun to see.
Praise God, man.
Yeah.
It's pulling people up higher.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we're called to do. You have a fundraiser next Monday. You have a get together. And I'm excited to be there. My wife and I are going to be there supporting you guys. But how can listeners, how can they support the Perry Center? Whether it's obviously donations or anything else you guys do, what are some ways that we can help? Help you guys.
Yeah. So I think the Perry Center fundraiser is always a good first touch of our ministry where you can really see what's going on. You're going to hear testimonies from our residents, real life people that have had their life changed, being at the Perry Center. And so I always say, go check it out. And I think those stories are really going to impact you. But when you're ready to dive in, we have things. You know, we're 100% donor funded, so we're not receiving government funds. So we exist because people invest in us. Mm. And so it takes a lot to run a maternity home. And so it takes an army to support us as well. And then also just people that are willing to get their hands dirty. You know, one of our big programs is a mentor program. And that mentor program is... we're not looking for perfect people. We're just looking for people that are doing life different and that they're willing to come alongside a resident and just do that life on life ministry. You know, once a week, go out to coffee. Maybe it's after church, hitting the Mexican restaurant and getting chips and salsa, whatever families typically do, we want them involved. And so, yes, we're always reaching out for mentor moms, but we're also looking for mentor families. So that's husbands, wives, kids saying, hey, you're going to be a part of our family and we're just going to do life. And that's where we see massive impact. But we have people that come in and teach classes, cook a meal, sit down and eat with our residents and just be really involved. And honestly, it literally takes an army. You know, one resident that I worked with had, we did a celebration and she had 25 support people around her. Those 25 people did not cross over to any other resident. So we knew anytime she was feeling temptation, worry, anxiety, wanted to celebrate, she had 25 new contacts in her phone that were healthy. Mm. And, you know, the saying, it takes a village, it really does for these women. And when we can come alongside them in their desperate hour and say, life can be so different with the gospel, it's powerful to see lives change.
Absolutely. What's the details on the fundraiser next Monday?
Yeah. So October 13th, if you're looking for a way to celebrate Columbus Day, this is the perfect way. So come to the fall fundraiser. It starts at 7 p.m. at the Hilton Garden Inn. It's a free event. I know that sounds crazy in today's world. It is free. We just ask that you RSVP. So go to our website, perrycenter.org. It's really simple. But we want to create an opportunity for all people to come and hear about our ministry. And it's a dessert, so come hungry for sugar. There's plenty of that. But it is a powerful night. We have a guest speaker. Her name's Kim Elliott, and she's going to be sharing her impactful story of conceiving a child through rape, and which is such a heavy topic. But is such a needed topic to talk about in our city. And so when we're talking about life issues, you know, this is the one that a lot of people want to dodge, or you know, the exception, the less than 1%. But she's really sharing her story on choosing life for her daughter, Andy, and raising her to know the Lord, and just what it took for that. And that took an army around her. And so there's going to be those stories, lots of resident testimonies, worship, dessert, all of that fun stuff.
Next Monday at the Hilton Garden Inn, hope that you can make the fall fundraiser for the Perry Center. And we're going to continue our conversation on the other side of the break with Nate. He's going to share a couple of those resident stories, and looking forward to just hearing more of what the Perry Center does here in Fargo-Moorhead. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Steve Hallstrom Show. This is Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve on this beautiful Friday afternoon. We will see you on the other side of the break. It is 5:22. 5 o'clock hour here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Thank you for tuning in to AM 1100 The Flag. Appreciate you hanging out with us here. And this is Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve. And we have in studio with us Nate Douglas, the executive director of the Perry Center, just shared a little bit about what the Perry Center does here in town. Maternity home that is doing the Lord's work. And we definitely love and appreciate the Perry Center. And Nate, we want you to share a couple of stories. And this is what, you know, listeners I know will find impactful about what you guys do in helping people and women, you know, that come out of incredibly tragic situations, take that step up and begin to bring to their life some self-worth and dignity, and just being able to provide for them and their baby. And you guys being the biggest influence in their life during that time. So let's you have some stories of what you guys have done over the years.
Yeah, do you have 10 hours, 12 hours?
I wish.
I mean, just... Yeah, God is working. We're in a season of fruit. You know, one of the stories that's actually going to be shared on Monday night, Kirsten is going to be sharing her story, and what a powerful story. Grew up in Alaska and, born and raised, to parents that were addicts, and she really had to figure out life on her own, walking around as a toddler, grabbing a beer can and drinking out of it because she was thirsty, and that was just laying around. And she shares that her Christmases looked very different at the age of 11. Her parents wrapped presents, put it under the tree. And when they opened the presents, they were drug paraphernalia and drugs. And so when you talk about a life that is so heavy, that is it, at the age of 11. And her addiction really started from there. And so it was a normal thing. Heavy drug dealer, trafficked a lot of drugs throughout the country, and she found herself in South Dakota and got arrested. And what's really interesting about that is, and any girl that I work with that is in the prison system or whatever, they said the best thing that has ever happened to me was getting arrested, because that forced you to do something different. And so she found her way to the Perry Center from South Dakota. We had some connections down there. And she was actually planning an abortion for her child and trying to get it scheduled, couldn't get it scheduled. We were able to jump in and be a part of her life, and brought her to the Perry Center. And we supported her, encouraged her, and her life is so drastically different now. She is raising an amazing son, and he's a beautiful child, and he just living life very, very different. She actually is now married, pouring into the Perry Center. She comes in and teaches classes now, and you know, it's beautiful seeing somebody come in at their worst moment and seeing where they're at now. And what I love about Kirsten's story is the big thing that changed her life was the gospel. That's it. You know, we do what we do very well. We've been doing it a long time, but I can't change a heart. I can't transform a life. The gospel is it. And she really grasped the gospel. And seeing her raise her son to know Jesus, her and her husband doing it together. And it's kind of that fairy tale piece to a life that was so heavy in addiction and dark places. And you know, it took people to step into that moment and say, hey, there's a life that can be drastically different with the gospel. And seeing her come over and pray over our residents and minister to them, it's so powerful.
Yeah. I once was lost, but now I'm found.
Yeah, like, amen.
It's amazing, man. And I don't know if you're willing to share. I know in our conversation last week, you had talked about, you know, the questions that you ask the women when they come. One of the questions that I really appreciated, I think maybe the last question is, are you willing to know? Or maybe you could share the questions that you ask. But
our questions are very simple. Like the first question that we ask is, hey, are you sober? You have to be sober 30 days to be in our program. But then we ask that really big open-ended question, are you open to know who God is?
That's it.
And that's such a big question. I've never had anybody tell me no. And, you know, we're modern America 2025 here. And the fact that people have never heard the gospel, heard the name of Jesus. And so we explore that and we open up God's word together, sit down and not the words of man, but really like, this is who Jesus is. This is what he's done for you. And this is how your life can be so much different. And it's a beautiful thing to see lives come to know Christ and to be a part of their journey. But it's not just like, hooray, you're accepting Jesus. No, we're sitting down doing that discipleship one-on-one. I think of some of the discipleship hours that we put into each resident. It's about 10 hours. This is outside of church and everything. This is 10 hours of discipleship a week with each resident and just creating a space for them to ask questions. Like, I don't know about this. What about this? And we've seen some just drastic conversions to the gospel, which is fun.
It's amazing. I think of the story of the disciples of Jesus following him and the crowds and the multitudes also following Jesus and Jesus saying those hard words of, you know, unless you eat of this flesh, drink of this blood. They were looking and thinking in a literal sense, but he basically was saying, you got to give all to follow me. And they were, the crowds and the multitudes were following him because of the miracle of provision, of bread. I mean, he broke the bread and it was the 5,000 that were fed and they followed him as a result of that miracle. But you know, he could see they're following me because they want more food. But then he asked the hard question and then the Bible says that many left him at that point and he turned to his disciples and he asked them the question, will you also leave? And they're like, where else are we going to go? Only you have the words of eternal life. And so if you've tried everything else, asking the simple open-ended question of, are you open to, you know, knowing who God is? It's like, we've tried everything else. Let's try this. And, you know, I love that. I love that because we know that these words are life and they work. And I love that about the Perry Center. So I applaud you for that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. And I get a kind of look at their life from a 30,000 foot view and just see how life is now. And sometimes they don't always recognize it right away, but you know, I see them in church often on Sundays and going up to the altar, whatever it is. And man, it just wrecks you knowing like where they were and where they're at now and just chasing after Jesus. And I think it's a beautiful thing.
It's amazing. Well, I appreciate you, Nate, for coming in and, love what the Perry Center is doing. Encourage everyone, all of our listeners, to go in to their fall fundraiser. They can RSVP at
PerryCenter.org.
PerryCenter.org. It's a free event next Monday at the Hilton Garden Inn at what time?
Yeah, it's 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Nate, for stopping in. Wish
it's
you all
joy.
The best.
It's a
God
joy.
Bless. Stick with us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. We're going to wrap up the last two segments, continuing our conversation about the homeless situation and whatever else you want to talk about. Give us a call, 701-271-1100. Shoot your text comments to 701-237-1590. We will see you after the news and weather's update. This is Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve. Hope you have a great, great weekend. We have Macy and myself sitting in. Macy behind the board taking all of your phone calls. And all of the bosses are gone. So this is dangerous. Steve is gone. Addison is gone. And so hopefully we...
It's our show now.
Hopefully we keep this ship afloat. But I appreciate all of your help, Macy. And we are and have been discussing, you know, the crisis that is in... I believe the city of Fargo is in surrounding our homeless situation. I'm going to continue a little bit of some final thoughts on that in this segment, and would invite you to share in your comments in the conversation. 701-271-1100. Texter texted in and says, do you think if homeless centers and social services were moved out of the downtown area, that would help with some downtown issues? Even on the edge of town or industrial areas, is that too simplistic? And he said, just spitballing some issues. And I think it's a good question, and I think there's a lot of economic impact in having these services downtown, the engagement center downtown, because of loss of revenue. With just the here's the reality: perception is reality, and so even if the there hasn't been violent crime, which there has been, but even if there's not as much as you think, just the harassment that many have either experienced personally or have heard secondhand, it has affected businesses. There have been businesses that have moved out of downtown. So I think it's a good question, Texter. And my opinion, I guess, is it's not going to solve the issues as much. I mean, we have in the downtown area right now, we have, of course, the Salvation Army, which is going to be in the downtown area. They do provide a ton of meals, breakfast and lunch, and I think at times dinner. There's also over in Moorhead, Churches United for the Homeless, feeding homeless over there, which is not in the downtown area. It's just off of downtown, but I know that there's a lot of travel back and forth. And so I don't know. The answer to the question is if it's going to solve the problem. I think, again, if you build it, they will come, no matter where it is. But I think it will, and to answer your question, I think it will solve some of the downtown issues in some ways, but it just shifts the problem into a different part of town. And you know, if you look at some of the crime statistics and numbers, I think you'll see that downtown is maybe, they would say, not the worst area as far as calls. Other areas, you know, but there's much more population out of downtown. So this I do know is that we run into a lot of homeless individuals downtown, a lot, and we have had them come into our business. We have had to pick up needles. I said it before, I've had to pick up feces, and you know, these are all things that impact quality of life, but also business. And so if you're a retail business in particular, these are very, very, very serious issues. But one thing I wanted to address, and I'll maybe just close this my end of the conversation with this, is we don't talk maybe enough about the cost and the economic cost of what these, not just the downtown engagement center costs, but the services that are being rendered throughout the community because of the increase in homeless population. So just a little bit of a story I want to share. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about, in the Bible study that I'm a part of with some guys here in town, we were talking about kind of the biblical idea and principle and truths of charity. And what does it mean? You know, when Jesus talks in Matthew 24 about, if you've done it unto the least of these, my brothers, you've done it unto me. What does that mean? And we sometimes, we're not quite sure. You know, we look through a glass darkly in regards to spiritual truth at times. And we see some things written. And how do we practically implement some of those? What was Jesus referring to? My opinion is that Jesus is speaking, and there was a much more community-focused audience that he was speaking to. So charity and love happens best within the confines of community. We have, unfortunately, shifted away that community from churches and families to the government. So the government has become really, unfortunately, the only community that some people have. You know, the checks come from the government, assistance come from the government, and it has eliminated, or I should say, isolated people from real community. So I think charity happens best within community. So we're, anyway, talking about that, and one gentleman in the Bible study, he was a former EMT, and so as a paramedic, he was answering calls for service, and it was all over Fargo, but you know, he made the observation. He said, when we encountered a homeless person, there was such a heaviness about it. So this, I want to speak to what he shared. He said there was this game that was being played. I want you to hear this, because this when I heard this, it got me fired up. So as an EMT, they would receive a phone call. and they would go out and, you know, they would experience whatever, you know, they were going to see. And, you know, many times with a homeless individual, they called themselves. Now, there were other times that people would call on behalf of the homeless individual and they would show up. And when they show up, they said there's a couple things that happen is they can refuse service right away. But if they tell the paramedics that they want to go to the hospital, the paramedics are required, the ambulance is required to take them there. They cannot say no, of course. And so he said there was there's this game that was being played where in the downtown area, the homeless would be picked up in the ambulance, and if they said they wanted to go to the hospital, they would have to take them there. And the emergency services happen at the Sanford Hospital over in West Fargo, right off of I-94. And so they would take them from the downtown area to Sanford, and when they would show up at Sanford, they would refuse. They would basically sign out from the emergency room. They would refuse service once they got to the emergency room. They would sign themselves out, and they would walk out of the emergency room there. And so this was conveyed to me, and I was kind of shaking my head and thinking, like, okay, so is this just a one-off thing? But it wasn't. It was something that happened quite frequently. In fact, there was one individual that happened multiple times with, and this guy was sharing with me. He said, you know, I asked him, he said, I was so frustrated because I knew what was happening. They were getting a ride from downtown to the hospital in an ambulance. And he asked the individual, he said, why are you doing this, man? Like, because they can't refuse service. They have to take them there. And he was basically said, well, it's cheaper than an Uber. And when I heard that, I'm like, you know, this somebody's paying for that. We're talking a couple $1,000 ambulance ride. And as a medical organization, somebody's paying for that. And so I don't know. I mean, these are very real scenarios that are happening in our town. So with an increase in a homeless population, there's an increase in all of the pressure of these services onto organizations like this EMT crew. And he shared one time, he said they were taking an individual from downtown to the hospital, and it was the exact scenario as I just described. And he said they got a phone call or a call during the ride of somebody that was coding. They needed emergency services right now, and they literally had to drive by taking this individual to the hospital. And he said he was so frustrated with what he experienced with. And listen, I know that, you know, there's bad actors out there that are going to abuse any system. But can we just be real and say that where there's smoke, there's fire. And, this is what is happening in our community. And, we need to have some serious conversations about it. And so I don't know, I don't have all the solutions. I wish I did. I don't, but I do feel like we can look to other cities that have experienced the same things that we are experiencing now in our growth, and we can say, okay, what's worked for them, what hasn't worked. But with policy, there's always an ideology behind it. And so certain ideologies lead to policies which lead to outcomes. And if those outcomes are more of the same instead of less of the problem, I think we need to take a step back then to the policy, but then take another step back to the ideology. And so I encourage you to get the book, order it, go buy it. It's called San Francisco, written by Michael Schellenberger. And he talks about why progressives ruin cities. I love Fargo-Moorhead. I've lived here for going on 8 years, and I love the downtown area. But ladies and gentlemen, we have a problem. We have a problem. And we can address the issue in love with charity and humanity. But what is, I think, the ideology that we have been seen in our city. It has grown the issue, and we're seeing more untreated mental health. We're seeing more untreated addiction. And so we need to have a very, very strong approach to this issue. And I think, again, I applaud the city for certain steps they've taken, but we need to take greater steps. And here we go. Winter's coming. And, I mean, we have hundreds downtown that right now, and throughout the community, but mainly downtown, that there's going to be some serious issues, and it's not a housing issue. We've talked a lot about it. We have one last break we have to get to. On the other side of the break, I want to just speak a little bit about the one-month anniversary of the Charlie Kirk assassination. We're going to visit about that, share some of my thoughts. We're 1 month removed from the great tragedy of Charlie losing his life, so I want to just speak a little bit to that. And if you have any final comments, give us a call, 701-271-1100, here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. You can also text us at 701-237-1590. It is 5:50, the last segment here in the 5 o'clock hour of the Steve Hallstrom Show. Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve. I was here yesterday, and yesterday we visited about a great awakening that I believe, that our nation is experiencing, our world is experiencing. That was a great conversation yesterday, and invite you to go and listen to the archives of that. But always appreciate Steve again for letting me sit here and just visiting, and thank you for taking some time to be with us here today. Wanted to end the show by discussing this. Today is, of course, being October 10th, is the one-month anniversary of the shooting of Charlie Kirk, the assassination of Charlie Kirk, and wanted to share some thoughts that I had on it. There's been so much talk about it. I just want to share a little bit maybe what's on my heart. I shared this with our church the day of the shooting, and I was stirred, as this entire nation was, and especially the young men and women that looked up to Charlie. This is what I really feel. I feel there is a vast difference with the shooting and the assassination of Charlie Kirk from really anything that most of us have ever experienced. It felt different than anything else. Even, I would say, to go as far as to say, when President Trump was shot, this was different. And of course, Charlie lost his life. President Trump did not. But this felt different. And I was trying to pinpoint the reasons why, where I do, ask the question, why did it feel so personal to so many? Well, I say this, is it was a spiritual assassination. It wasn't a political assassination. And I know to some that may seem kind of extreme, but this is my take, is we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world. We don't wrestle against flesh and blood. But I made this statement, they do. The other side does. The enemy does. And so if we thought like Charlie Kirk, maybe didn't agree on everything, but we have a biblical foundation and worldview that he had, if we were sitting in the same chair, they would shoot us too. And that's what made it so personal, I felt, to so many, because every truth-loving individual felt this attack personally. And Charlie was the face of a movement that was courageous and bold to speak truth to a generation. And so that's what's fascinating. I think growing up, I grew up on a farm in central North Dakota, and all we had in the tractor was AM radio. So I was a Rush baby, meaning I just listened to Rush Limbaugh, because that's really all that was on the radio. But growing up, I never remember Rush Limbaugh talking about, and maybe I'm mistaken, somebody could correct me if I'm wrong, but I never remember him talking about Jesus Christ, the Bible. I never remember him doing that. Now, he talked about politics, obviously, a great communicator in the political world. And he communicated truth, of course. But it's different. I feel like the times that we live in are so different, even than in the 80s and 90s. And when I say that, these issues that are being debated, that some call culture warrior issues, these are just morality and Bible issues. And so Charlie was very vocal about his faith first. He led with that. And I think he had somewhat of an evolution on that. I think as a young man, he started really trying to be like Rush Limbaugh, but knowing and the deeper he dug into things that are true and right and beautiful and eternal, the more that it pointed him to his faith. And so he couldn't separate the two. And that's what, again, felt so different, is that it wasn't a political assassination, just as if somebody like a Rush Limbaugh, let's say, would have been assassinated. It was different because it was a spiritual, it was a spiritual moment where you could feel it. It was good versus evil, a voice to be silenced simply because of what he held in his faith first. Now, political beliefs being second. And yeah, he was involved in all of those political conversations, but that's not really who he was. He was first a Christian, and he stood up for biblical values first. You know, if someone would ask him greatest life advice, it was this. It was get married, have kids, raise a family. It wasn't, hey, go and support this political candidate. I mean, there was that, but that wasn't what he led with. And so asking the questions of why did it feel so personal? Man, I feel like because all of us none of us are perfect. We're all striving. But man, it felt so personal. And that's even this last month, I have a 12-year-old son, and just recently, you know, ever since it has happened, we have Charlie Kirk playing in our house all the time. And, you know, my wife made the comment the other day. She says, you know, he could be listening to a lot worse things, meaning looking up to Charlie as somebody that is a good voice for our time, I think it's a beautiful thing. And so thank you for hanging with me on the Steve Hallstrom Show. It's been a pleasure. And until next time, God bless, and I hope you have a great weekend.